Blog Talk Radio.
This is the RF Radio Show with OJ and Dreadfish.
Good evening, everyone. It's 6:30 Eastern Time, and you're listening to Radio RF with me, Dreadfish, and my co-host, ETOJ. So today, we are doing the first of two episodes on meditation and mysticism. In an attempt to logically split the topic into two episodes, we decided to do this first episode on the view, to borrow from Buddhist terminology, and our next episode will be about the practice or the path. This will allow for a discussion from both a theoretical and a personal point of view on both of these topics. So the view will encompass is the perspective from which we approach our practice and the framework through which we practice. And then the practice and the path is the actual practice. So we'll get to that in just a few minutes. But first, Itty, I was talking to you earlier this week, and you had mentioned that there was some interesting news from up in your area.
Yeah, Friday, around midday, apparently what I'm now being told happened was some truck or car, I tried to force their way through one of the truck entrances at Picatinny Arsenal, which is the military base near where I live. And originally there was reports of either a bomb going off or the guy having a bomb or there being a car bomb. It was pretty scary because there was no information and like 15 was shut down. All the other roads were backed up. I heard there was a 5-mile radius evacuation or lockdown in the area. Schools were locked down. It was just very scary. There wasn't a lot of information out available, and that's what kind of really made it scary. But there was really nothing, I guess. I guess just some person being crazy. I still don't know exactly what happened. I was surprised, actually, that there wasn't more information about it when I was going because, no one else was talking about it and except for a few local news stations. But it involved the military, so it was kind of scary. Anyways, I didn't get to go see it. I was going to go see a movie, but because traffic was so bad, because the road I take, I wasn't closed, but because the other road was closed and the other roads were backed up, my road is backed up. And I didn't make it in time to get dinner and a movie, so we just had dinner. So I can't tell you about any movies this week. Hopefully next weekend I can do a movie review. I was really looking forward to doing that. And again, if you're looking to do a movie review, you can contact either ItOG or Dreadfish, or you can call us right now at 646-200-4733. You can let us know basically what type of section you want to do, kind of the same way that Well Named does, as well as Lewis Not Miller. So this weekend, I was going to talk about the pictures with my garden this weekend. And as you can see, we actually have three images for tonight's episode. One is what was the first picture? The picture you posted.
Yes, the first image is from a carving at Angkor Wat. A yogi.
Okay, and why did you pick that for tonight's episode?
Well, meditation, mysticism, yogis are pretty much synonymous with that, and it just occurred to me that I had a picture of that for my trip, and I thought that would be really good. So, it's there. Amazing that that's hand-carved. God.
Yeah, definitely pretty cool carving. So as you can see, there's two other pictures on tonight's episode, and those are of the garden I built this weekend. And the front one, which is I think the image that's listed first, and that's the one taken kind of from in front of it with like a little wooden border. That's mostly a shaded garden. It only gets like maybe 3 hours of sun in the morning at most. So we're just going to be growing like kale and lettuce, and we have collard greens growing, planted some spinach and some herbs to grow. Whatever shade tolerant. And the larger one, the one taken from up top, is my back garden, and that gets fulsome. So I'm going to be growing like tomatoes, okra, peppers. I've got some cabbage planted, some broccoli. And I didn't know that, but cabbage and broccoli like full sun. I assume they're like other green things, but nope, they're like full sun. And you can the taste of that area, I actually made that in a compost last year. So that whole area, and that's 25 feet long, by the way. I don't know how wide it is. I didn't measure it. It probably changes. But I made all that soil about 2 inches deep from a compost pile from all the compost I made last year.
Well, that sounds good. We just got a few things to start planting as well. Got some, you know, soil, and got some big planters, and so planning on planting some herbs. I'm not sure which ones yet, but yeah, looking forward to having some. I always like having those around to just pick a leaf off and munch on.
Mhm, it's definitely nice, and it's nice to have especially like herbs to have around, because you never know when you're cooking something, you just kind of want to add like a splash of this or that, or something you're so easy to overlook when you're buying rest for that week.
Yeah, having fresh herbs is great for cooking, and you know, like I said, I've always loved just eating some of it. You know, like every time I go check on the garden, you know, I would just, you know, take some leaves off of each plant to eat them, you know, and I'm both doing the plant a little bit of a favor because that helps it grow more, and also it tastes good, so it's always nice.
It was actually nice. We ended up meeting some of our neighbors this weekend, and then they came out gardening with us and stuff, and then I guess work on the garden with us and stuff, so that was kind of cool. You get to meet a bunch of people, and it was a nice day. All right, so I guess I should give my thoughts on tonight's episode. I'm a little apprehensive tonight for tonight's episode. I guess because we come from a confrontational opinion on tonight's topic, that I'm a little apprehensive about being a part of tonight's episode. You know, personally, I don't consider personal experience to really be evidence or really knowledge of any kind. It kind of lacks predictability and explanatory powers that you see from, like, a more scientific approach to things. And I don't really think it's coming to... I mean, I think you need knowledge about yourself. And also there's a difference between practicing something and believing in something. So, I mean, I don't know. You said tonight's episode is we're doing The View, and that was a term in Buddhism. What exactly does that term mean?
Well, this is usually used in Tibetan Buddhism, and I need to make sure I get these correct. It's been a little while since I've read it. But so you have the view, the practice, and the, for lack of a better word, the goal, because I can't remember right offhand what the actual term it is. But so you start off with the view, and this is the view you hold for your practice. This is how you approach yourself, the world, and your practice. And then you practice, and through the practice, you reach the destination. Now, there's some what would be called higher forms of practice within Buddhism, and though they wouldn't use this terminology within other traditions as well, where the view, path, and the goal are all the same. And it's difficult to explain that one, but it has to do with approaching the world and practice as if you're already there, for lack of a better way of explaining it. And I imagine that one of our guests may understand some of that. I'm not sure how much Windwalker has studied Buddhism, but nonetheless, I think that we'll be able to have some good perspectives on that. So we'll go ahead and start off today with what is mysticism. Now, there are various definitions for what mysticism is and, you know, what it means to an individual. In general, it is a very wide wide definition, but it seeks to transform the human experience and to directly experience, in a theistic tradition, God or the absolute, or in a less or non-theistic tradition, directly experience reality as it is, without the buffers or intermediaries of ideas or anything like that. So for me personally, mysticism is about the personal direct experience, and it is beyond ideas. It's a tricky slope or a tricky path. There's a quote from the book called Razor's Edge, where somebody says to the main character that the path to enlightenment is as tedious and difficult to tread as a razor's edge. And it's very true. There's a lot of pitfalls and can't think of the right way of explaining it, but you can trick yourself into thinking that you're experiencing certain things or that you've experienced the truth. So I'm going to stop there and go to Orbit. So Orbit, in your experience, in your perspective, how do you view mysticism? What is it to you and what is it not to you?
Well, because of my background in anthropology, I tend to see it globally. Whether it's shamanism, Islam, Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism, as you read what mystics say across the traditions, they seem to echo a common theme. And that common theme to me is not a religious theme. It's not owned by religion. It's a human theme. And the human theme is a feeling of connectedness with all. A feeling that you understand the universe, that you're part of the universe. And a common theme is feeling the love of all things. But to me, mysticism doesn't refer to a religion or a dogma. It refers to a direct experience that you can have in any number of traditions that will nevertheless be recognizable to people in other traditions, maybe those describing it in different words and speaking a different language. But I think it's a quintessentially human experience.
All right. I like that explanation. Okay, so let's see about Windwalker. To you, what is mysticism? What is it not?
Where do I begin? Hi. Let's see. There's a lot of misconceptions of what is out there. In a lot of the discussions, is there's people see it across the board as far as anywhere from, you know, secret societies, people with, you know, knots in their underwears and special handshakes and esoteric knowledge or, you know, hidden knowledge only for the elite, all the way to New Age sorts of expressions. And for me personally, basically the mystical experience is, it's just hard to put into words, of course, that kind of defines it. Terms like the use of the word God, for instance, I would prefer to use terms like the absolute or the infinite. Paul Tillich, the quote from him is like spirituality is that which deals with one's ultimate concern of our being, our sense of connection to the world. And the mystical, our normal way of living life is within the self-reflexive, discursive mind where we're thought objects. We think about ourselves, we define ourselves by this or by that, by our identities, by our created identities through relationships with others, through ourselves, through what we look at, whereas the mystical experience drops all of that, and it connects to what is really, another Tillich term, the ground of being, the source, the absolute, the infinite, who we are before we became who we are, and all the stages of our growth and development is that's our relative sense of self, and the mystical experience is an experience of the absolute self, who we are before and beyond all of those self-identifications. It drops off all of that, and in the terms of the Buddhist expression, talking about clinging causes suffering, and that the clinging is really to the things that we look to as a sense of self-security, self-identification. This is me, and I will protect that at all costs because don't you mess with me. This is who I am, and gosh darn it, I love myself, and I'm trying to seek affirmation. Well, when you drop all of that, your anxiety levels and everything else tends to definitely drops away. And you just become connected with yourself and the world around you, which you are part of. Everything just becomes just this, just simple, very clear, it's not about an ideology. It's not about a belief. And, you know, I don't know, I can go on and on for a bit, but hopefully I touched upon the topic. This is the first time I've actually talked about this in a public format, so forgive my stumbling around a little bit. I'll get my momentum going here as we continue on.
That's fine, and we'll have time to get to some of that more in depth. So also, one quick question. What background or what perspective do you approach this from?
Oh, boy. how do I encapsulate 30 years of my life?
Just
in
a few words.
I'll keep it very brief. Keep it under a couple of minutes here. I kind of began my
just
journey when I was a couple words what my background is.
No. What you approach mysticism from? Like, what is your current tradition?
Oh, current. I am all religions. I am none.
All right. I like that answer. Okay, so let's move on to well named. So, same questions. What does it mean to you? What is it, or what is it not to you? And also, what tradition do you approach it from?
Okay, so I'm Eastern Orthodox Christian by tradition, although I read a lot of Hindu and Buddhist things that I wouldn't necessarily limit myself only to. I think mysticism is broader than any particular tradition. As far as what it is and what it's not, I think you guys have covered a lot of the major themes that I'd want to hit, so I'm just going to reiterate a few of them real briefly. So the first one is that it's an immediate experience. Like one of my favorite authors would say, it's the conscious touch of reality. And then one of the other ones is, I think somewhere, maybe it was Orbit that mentioned, it's the touch of the whole of reality. It's an integral experience. And in a lot of traditions, they would put that in a certain way where I think, I just give an example, Rumi in one of his poems wrote that every flower that wafts its scent into the outside world speaks of the mystery of the whole. And so that's sort of the mystical experience to me, is the experience of the whole, sometimes through the simplest part, like a flower. And it's not just integral in the sense that I experience the whole of reality, but that I experience reality with the whole of my own being. It's an integral experience for me, too. It has to be something that integrates all that I am. Let's see. So those are two of the major things. I think it's interesting. Windwalker mentioned Paul Tillich and the idea of ultimate concern. And as if I recall correctly, he used that phrase to describe faith. That was kind of his definition of faith, which I think gets back, interestingly, to kind of Itty Oje's remarks at the beginning. That whole question of the relationship between faith and subjective experience and science and objectivity and all that. But that's not so much what mysticism is, but I think it's central to trying to understand mysticism from a modern perspective, perhaps, because so many people start from those sorts of naturalistic assumptions. So let's see. Mysticism is experience, it's immediate, it's integral. Windwalker mentioned ineffability almost in passing, but you know, the reason the word mysticism is related to the word mystery is because there's this idea, this universal idea, that somehow it transcends the thinking mind. Windwalker mentioned discursive thinking. So I think put all those things together, and in a nutshell, that's kind of what mysticism is.
Okay, thank you. So what I want to move on to next is, what is the value of the mystical experience and mystic traditions in general? So to go ahead and answer my own question, it is like Windwalker said, through the types of recognitions and realizations you come to through practice, it does lead you to live life differently. From my own paradigm and my approach, I'm mainly Buddhist, and officially speaking, I took the precepts in the Zen tradition, Soto Zen, but I also take inspiration from anywhere and everywhere, whatever really speaks to my heart. My absolute favorite, or my favorites, are Ramana Maharshi and Nisargadatta Maharaj. And so from my paradigm. The point is to get beyond the limited sense of self. To even think that you exist is actually an illusion. And that was really difficult for a while for me to comprehend, and it didn't make any sense. But as practice has gone on, it actually makes more sense than other things, and I see things more clearly. And so the value in it is that it leads you to live a more peaceful life. The point is, from the Buddhist perspective, to be without stress, without dissatisfaction. So this experience and these practices lead to that. So I want to ask Orbit, what do you think? What is the value of mysticism and the mystical experience?
I think the value, you can almost describe it actually for Itty here in secular terms by saying that the value is psychological. And just using a different vocabulary, you can say that the value is spiritual. To me, they're not too far apart. It's about learning, not learning, but experiencing empathy, compassion, and love for yourself and for others. In mystic experiences that I have had, the gist of them was feeling connected to all things and feeling love and compassion for all people and all things. That's profoundly psychologically impactful. So in secular terms, that's powerful. That's a powerful transformative experience. It's going to change the way you live your life. In spiritual terms, it's just a different vocabulary for talking about it. In spiritual terms, it's connecting with your spirit and the spirit of others. It's just two different vocabularies for talking about the same thing, but the commonality is that both enable you to lead a more compassionate life.
Okay. All right, so Windwalker, you touched on this a good bit already. Do you have anything else to say regarding the value of it? Why mysticism? What is it going to add to us or take away from us in a positive sense?
Okay, yeah, the latter question is an interesting way of looking at what does it take away from us. It takes away, I'll start there, oddly enough. It takes away our fear. It takes away our anxiety in living and the stress that we live with, like I say, in self-protection mode. It brings us back in touch with the essentials of what life itself is. In a lot of ways, it's like if you can remember back when you were like 5 years old and you were outside before you had the cares of the world upon you, you know, and the wonder of life that you experience every moment was just like, what is this? It's all a new discovery. Well, it's like that as an adult, but it's not a return to infantile, you know, but it's as a mature adult that now you're reconnecting with that essential beingness, but yet as fully mature and self-aware as Maslow would talk about it, as a self-actualized individual. And this moves up into transpersonal psychology. Is where do we go beyond after we've developed a healthy and whole ego? How do we really connect with the world and ourselves? And it truly is a spiritual experience. It's like you breathe the world like it is water. It's fresh, cool, living water. And I have a background in Christian tradition, and you'll often see, especially in the forum participation, you'll see I use that vocabulary quite often, and it's meaningful to me now that I've moved away from the religious dogma sort of an approach. But it's like, you know, he that believes in me, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water. And that really aptly, to me, expresses it, because it is an exchange of light and of energy and of love that radiates through everything, and it is connecting to all of that. And it's not, you know, and it somewhat addresses ITOJ's, I'm not sure if I'm saying it the right way, but, you know, objection, which I think we should get to at some point later in here. But it is, I'll make a preface, is that the mystical experience is not a cognitive belief. just to reiterate that, it is that it is an experiential ground. It is a centeredness, and the result of it is peace, genuine peace, not just calmness. But everything is as it should be, and you can have love and compassion flowing out of you. And I think that, you know, in a real high level, that captures what to me the mystical experiences, touching life.
I like the way that you say that, touching life. All right, thanks. So, well named. And you also come from a similar tradition that Wind Walker has come from. So, again, what is the value of mysticism to you?
Yeah, so I'm sensing a theme here where they're usually going to say everything that I want to say, which is nice. I kind of like that. So the idea of love and compassion, very much, obviously, central to, I think, Christian mysticism. I guess what I would say is, on some level, everyone wants to be happy. Everyone wants a certain kind of fulfillment out of life to understand what life means to them and to find joy in it. And there's a lot you could say about that, but I think mystical traditions fairly universally find that fulfillment and joy in that experience and in the life that it leads to, which includes those ideas of compassion and love for everything and that feeling of being a participant with everything, part of the sort of dance of life, Shiva Nataraja in Hinduism, or, you know, Wind Walker quoted Jesus, so I can quote Hinduism. but like Jesus said, I've come that they may have life and that more abundantly. So I think life is a central symbol to sort of the value of mysticism, its fullness of life. So I think I'll leave it at that.
All right. So Itti, do you have any responses or any opinions on what people have said and any ideas about anything positive about mysticism?
I think I said at the beginning that there is a difference between having beliefs and between having a practice or an experience. And I do think there's definitely value in practices and experiences. That means that I don't necessarily think mysticism or personal experience is a way to necessarily garner information or knowledge or beliefs. And I know Wind Walker has said that it's really not about beliefs but about experiences. But, I mean, I feel too often when you talk to people about the experiences, it's only about the belief associated with it. If that makes any sense. And in regards to the experience of love and compassion, I mean, is it just feeling those things in general a mystical experience, or is the mystical experience larger than just the experience of love and compassion for everything?
Those are good points. It does have a lot to do with... It goes beyond that, but those feelings of love and that sort of thing, I would say, are an effect. They come as a product of the experience or the insight achieved through practice. So, as Wind Walker mentioned, we do inevitably have to look at knowledge. And so, from a little bit of a epistemology type point of view here, we do have to ask, what is knowledge? What is the value of this knowledge? We get knowledge from things like through science. We observe things happening. We have names for these things, and we have names for the mechanisms that we see happen, that sort of thing. And you know, we have our own personal experiences. We experience everything right now, and so we have these ideas about things. You know, is this knowledge? That sort of thing. Now to go to what you mentioned, it does seem a lot like these things are expressed through belief. And I think often the mystical experience is expressed through the terminology and symbolism of the tradition in which it is experienced. Sometimes because the individual is still within the realm of ideas and that sort of thing, but also because sometimes they choose to teach it this way so that those who are in the tradition that they are in will be able to understand it. It's like the Zen saying, a finger pointing at the moon. It's only the finger. It's not the moon. And so whenever you take the ideas as the thing itself, then you are missing the point. let's see. So did you had something else you wanted to say, Itti?
Well, I mean, I just this current discussion kind of reminded me of last week's section of 5 Minute Philosophy with Will Names, and he asked the question. Your experiences are, I think the term is qualia, right? Are those
qualia.
Knowledge?
Mm-hmm.
Qualia is qualia knowledge, and I guess I kind of fall into the area that no, qualia isn't knowledge,
okay.
Or isn't knowledge in and of itself. And that,
okay.
That tends to be my biggest objection to mysticism. Outside of that, I tend to think practices as treated as such can be beneficial in the same way as there's scientific proof that meditation itself beneficial to people, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I think it may come down to what we're defining as knowledge, and maybe if we have an idea that there are different types of knowledge. So first, I want to take this question to Orbit. And what do you think about knowledge? Are there different types of knowledge? What is the quality of knowledge we learn by hearing things, reading things, these ideas we have, and what is the quality of knowledge of direct experience, a sort of intuitive knowledge?
Well, there's definitely different kinds of knowledge. Nobody's trying to send a rocket to the moon using mysticism. Science is science, and science has its place. But there's also the contemplative, which has its place. As human beings, judging by the cultures that we have seen, have a need for spirituality, have a need for something besides science, for something that satisfies the emotions, something that satisfies the soul. And that's not meant, and nobody is claiming, that takes the place of science. I mean, I have a doctorate. I respect science. I'm trained in the scientific method. I don't see that in any way at odds with mystic experience. Mystic experience is about something qualitatively different. It's about understanding yourself and others as a human being, about understanding spiritually and emotionally and psychologically your place in the universe. It's not about sending a rocket to the moon, and nobody's claiming that it is. I think there are different kinds of knowledge, and the mystic experience is valuable self-knowledge and knowledge about others.
All right. So, Windwalker, what do you think about knowledge?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Self-knowledge. You know, one of my favorite non-scriptural quotes that I love. Back in the day, I used to be a walking concordance, but I always wish that this could be added to scripture, which is from Shakespeare. It says, "This above all else to thine own self be true." And that's self-knowledge, you know, is that through self-knowledge, the mystical experience leads you to self-knowledge. It leads you to self, to use an existential term, sincerity, you know, bad faith and all of those sorts of terms, that if you truly know yourself and you are able to experience your very being without all the pretenses and all the self-judgments, you're able to freely love. Because to me, this is a stretch, you know, in a metaphysical sense of the word, you know, the nature of reality is love, you know. Now, let's not put too much stock in what I'm saying there. The experience of it comes through in that sense. And when you have that level of self-knowledge, when you are unanxious, when you are just self-aware, you are able to love others and see others. And so that in itself is a knowledge of reality. It is a knowledge of yourself. It's beyond your cognitive understanding. Trying to map things with your reasoning, your rationality, and your analytics, and God knows I that's, you know, another side of me that's equally as strong. It is not the same as the kind of knowledge that comes from knowing yourself, because there is knowing love. And knowing love, not theoretically, but knowing it in your very, very being. And when you are able to live that and to be that in the world, it transforms the world for you, and it transforms the world for everyone else around you. It affects everyone you touch. You see it. It's beautiful. It's hard to describe. It's like, I used the word in that one before, but it's right. It's like a flow. It's like a river. And you hear a certain passion in my voice, and that's just, you know, this is experience. This is not theory. You know, I can get all theoretical and academic, and I was hesitant tonight in the discussion. It's like, oh, God, I don't want to go academic, but we'll leave it at that. So I don't know if that answers the question. There's a different kind of knowledge than just theoretical, academic, and models. I mean, models are a great way to take experience and to try to talk about them. But when we become married to our models of reality as the facts of reality, we limit ourselves into where we can go through, grow through in our humanity, which is spiritual in nature, meaning fluid, open, dynamic. It's limitless. Evolution has no ceiling. So I'll leave it at that.
All right. And I also like what you're saying. We need to move beyond that framework. And that made me think of something which I can relate to a more empirical point of view. Within Theravada specifically, I read one monk who was a teacher had said that, you know, the Buddhist teachings are not something that you're meant to believe, that, you know, this is the fact of the matter, this is reality. The Buddhist teachings are meant to be taken like scientific papers. You're supposed to look at them, test them, see how they match up with reality, and through practice and meditation of vipassana, actual direct experience of right now and what's going on, you see whether these things are true or not yourself. So within the tradition of Buddhism, these things are not meant to just be taken as a belief and then you live believing this is the fact. They're meant to be taken as a pointer saying, this is what's going on, see for yourself. You know, it is what Buddha said, you know, don't believe anything you've heard just because it's tradition, etc. You know, you have to find out yourself.
And so, what's more, we take that and embody it in ourselves and live it through our own unique expression. So it is like that certain principles, the Dharma, if you will, are not a dogma that you adhere to, but become like a living document. And so in the Christian tradition has that as well. You know, in that day I will write my law upon the tablets of their heart. You know, it's not chiseled in stone, but it is a living and dynamic, breathing reality. Truth, with a capital T, if you want to use it in those terms, is not a static reality, but an evolving reality expressed through us in our fully realized beings. So,
yeah, it's very true. I think in most traditions you'll find that they'll say that somebody who has awakened to the truth is they are the truth. They become that, and they are an expression of that.
Yep, but when I hear Jesus say, "I am the way, the truth, and the life," that's what I hear. It's not like I'm the only truth. I embody truth itself. So,
yeah. All right. So, Windwalker, same question. Oh. What do you think about knowledge? And
it starts with a W, but it's slightly different. It's well named. there's so many things in there that are interesting conversations all on their own. But to go back to the question was about knowledge and to try to elaborate a little bit on different kinds of knowledge. You know, in classical epistemology, knowledge refers to something that's objective in a sense, where it's sort of like we take this stance where we're standing aloof from the world and we're observing it and we're reaching conclusions about things either through a process of logic or through empirical observation. And so there's a sort of implicit subject-object dichotomy in epistemological knowledge. You know, there's a subject that has knowledge of some object out in the world. But in many ancient traditions, there's an idea of a different kind of knowledge that we've been talking about. And at least in Christianity, which I know more than other traditions, the very word love itself refers to that sort of knowledge. That's why, for example, Paul's famous love chapter in 1 Corinthians 13, it has all this description of what love is. But then it has this verse that seems kind of out of place if we think of love as this purely emotional thing. It says, "For now we see through a glass darkly,
you know, but then face to face. He starts talking about knowledge, that now we have this incomplete knowledge, but that, and he ties that back to the fact that ultimately, you know, there's faith, hope, and love, but the greatest of these is love. And it's because for these ancient traditions, love is sort of a participation with what is known, and there's this knowledge that comes through participation, which ties together this idea that it's life, it's living, it's not abstract, it's not conceptual, it's prior to that. And that's why, I guess, also it's hard to talk about, because it's preconceptual. These concepts and ideologies and frameworks, they come later. We can't help but formulate them. But first of all, there's just the experience itself, which is a kind of knowledge, but it's like Orbit said, it's not the kind of knowledge that gets you to the moon. It's the kind of knowledge that makes you not need to go to the moon, I guess might be a way of saying it. So that's epistemology. There's so much more to say, but I'm kind of drawing a blank, so you might want to just go to the next question and I'll think about it.
All right, and we will have time to go with this. First, I want to get Itzy's response, and then we'll take a short break with a song. So, Itzy, what do you think about knowledge, the quality of different knowledge? Are there different types of knowledge?
I'm going to give the other people tonight, and I do actually think there are different kinds of knowledge or truths or whatever you want to call them. And I tried to label them as best I could, but I broke them into three different areas. And one is what I'm going to call natural truths. Another one is what I'm going to call social truths. And another one is what I'm going to call self truths. And I guess by self truths, I kind of think I'm on the same page as what everyone else says. So you kind of get the same idea is what I mean by a self truth. And then I have social truths, but I think it's a little bit different than what anyone else went into. And what I mean by social truth is kind of the social reality or social construct. Like even science would be an actual a social truth. Mysticism would be a social truth. There's these ways that we construct, these ways that we view things, and the environmental impact of our society on us. And it's really just kind of everything acting on what you're seeing and how you're seeing it is what I kind of call the social truth. What actually is there, if anything is technically, is what I'm going to call the natural truth or empirical truth. And then there's the experiences that we experience is going to make what I call the social truth, self truth.
Okay. And I would say that it seems that these different types of knowledge serve different purposes. Ultimately, from my point of view, of course, I feel that the self-truth is the most important because that allows us to live in harmony with life. But, you know, a person who is, quote, enlightened, unquote, still has to eat, still has to walk, to see, to communicate with other people, that sort of thing. And there is one of the applications of regular conceptual knowledge. It is necessary. It's part of how our brain functions, and it's how we navigate the world. So we'll get back to this in one moment, but we will take a short break with a song by our own Windwalker.
I'm sorry. I think Dreadfish dropped. If you're just getting back in, you're listening to Radio RF, and tonight's episode is about meditation and mysticism. And the last song you just heard was actually by Windwalker. And Windwalker, can you tell us what that song was called?
What was that question?
What was the name of the song we were just listening to? That was you playing, right?
Oh, that was, interestingly enough, I named that Musical Visions. That was written, oh gosh, you know, a good 10 years ago now. And yeah, kind of an appropriate title for tonight, you know, Mystical Experience, Visions. And anyway.
All right, well, again, thank you for submitting the song. And if you anyone else wants to hear their music on Radio RF, you can submit it to either Dreadfish or I and send it to us in MP3 format to our email. The contest is on RF if you need our email.
So if you're just tuning in, we've been talking about meditation and mysticism. Specifically for this episode, which is the first of two parts, we're talking about the view, the perspective from which we are approaching our practice and the world and mysticism. I want to go ahead and apologize in advance. I'm having some connectivity issues, so if my call drops, then Itty will go ahead and take over and I'll try to reconnect. So we've been talking about knowledge, the quality of knowledge, and that sort of thing. Now, I wanted to get into some personal experiences with this. You know, why do you think mysticism is worth pursuing, worth the effort? What experiences have you had that tell you this is something worth pursuing, that back up what you've heard or read about mysticism and its various forms? To go ahead and answer my own question, I have had experiences which would be undeniable to me, and I guess they would fit in under what Itty called self-knowledge. It is difficult to really decide, you know, I experienced this, I experienced that, what's the truth? The interesting thing about, I guess, what you would call a mystical experience is that there's something absolutely undeniable about it. It is of a completely different quality than regular everyday experience. Without going into too much detail, I guess the most prominent experience I've ever had involved, one, perceiving that absolutely everything I ever thought I knew about anything was completely untrue. And it's difficult to really express the depth of that fact. It almost sounds kind of scary if you think about it now, like, oh gosh, everything I think about everything is completely false. It's like a dream. But whenever it happened, it was the greatest relief. It was like, oh, none of that was real in the first place. You know, there was absolutely nothing to worry about ever. And the other main point of that experience was there was absolute feeling of peace and love, unsurpassable by anything. There was absolutely not a trace of dissatisfaction of any kind of thing like that. So let's go ahead and move on to orbit. Now, have you had any types of experiences that lend credibility to mysticism or to the approaches which you take?
Well, here's the thing. It's not like I ever read about mysticism and said, God, I have to do that. It doesn't work like that. I used to be a Christian, and so my experiences with mysticism were interpreted through a Christian lens, but it's not like it was ever a goal. It's not like when I had the experience, I had been thinking about it and was saying, you know, oh gosh, I hope I can do that. It wasn't like that. The experience came first. And the experience can be quite mundane. It's a feeling of connection to the world, to others, and it can occur in the most mundane circumstances. I'll give you an example. When I was in my 20s, I was seeing a band in Kansas City called the Meat Puppets. They were like a neo-psychedelic kind of band. And I was just sitting there watching the band, and everybody was dancing and drinking and having a good time. And all of a sudden, it was like I was in a different space, and I felt God's love for everyone, and I felt connected to the idea that they were all just children, and they were all going to be okay, no matter what they were doing. They didn't know what they were doing, but God loved them. And I viscerally felt that overwhelming love for the people dancing in that bar. So it's not like it occurs in the cathedral. It's not like, you know, stained glass windows. You'll just be having a normal moment in your life, and suddenly everything is transformed. And what happened with me is that I would then, as I came across readings and people who had written about this, I would recognize my experience in the readings and then became interested in mysticism. The arrows go the other way. It started with experience and ended up with an interest, not the other way.
Well, that's very interesting. Not many people, I think about it from that point of view. Unfortunately, we are getting very close to time, so we will definitely have to continue this with the next episode. So if we can get some short words from Windwalker, well-named, and Itty, too, if we have time. I hate to cut this off short, but I think it's best to not go too far over an hour, and also we can save some of this material for our next episode. So, Windwalker, if you have anything that you can mention in so many words.
Yeah, this is hard to kind of pick.
Yeah, that's quite a, hard, yeah, quite a thing.
Kind of hard to pick this up in another episode because of the moment and the nature of what this is, but I'll try to keep it brief and maybe we can revisit it later. Very much.
And we'll go ahead and, sorry to interrupt, we'll go ahead and just make this the last question. So you can go ahead and answer.
Right.
Just try not to make it too long.
Yeah, very, very much to reiterate the terminology that you and everyone has been saying is the terms of the absolute. In my particular experience, and I want to pick it up again later, is that this happened before my engagement with religious institutions and seeking answers within religion. It was a cessation of time. Time stood still. There was a bright, luminous light that stopped, and I stood in the face of eternity, and there was nothing but the absolute. Keeping that story brief, and a couple days later, it opened up where the universe just basically rent wide open, and it was just every single molecule was radiating life itself and love. And I saw people walking by me, and everyone radiated it, but I could see in themselves that they were just unaware of what and who they truly were, and, you know, living in a world of their own imagination or their own isolation is a better way of putting it. And that started my pursuit of trying to return home, as it were, in practice, and I was seeking out religion and trying to find my way back. And now I've taken up a meditation practice, which is really, to sum it up in a single word, it is to have begin where I begun, and all the time is an encounter with that absolute, an encounter with the ineffable in myself, and a transformative practice. So I'll leave it at that, and it's been a great episode. Thanks, guys.
Oh, yeah, thank you very much, and yeah, I like what you say. So let's get to Windwalker. So what experiences have you had?
I resonate quite a bit with what Orbit said. The experience was first, for me, it started about, I guess it was 16 years ago, that sort of overwhelming presence of love. And like she said, that it was sudden, like a sudden transformation. And whatever the sort of path that I've been on ever since, it was in a sense very sudden. I went from being sort of an agnostic, atheist, science-loving skeptic, which I'm still most of those things, actually. I was very suddenly transformed in my whole outlook towards life by that love, that presence of love. But in this, at the same time, I've been sort of trying to discover what it means ever since. So it's also been a very slow process. And I guess the last thing I would say is we've talked a lot about, or at least the others have talked a lot about self, and I agree with all that. There's a word that, for me, symbolically, has been very important in my experience of mysticism, and that word is silence. And it's sort of like mystical experience, the reason you can't speak about it, or only haltingly, is because it's a silent experience. It doesn't speak. So like right now I'm just standing out near my house and I'm outside and in the woods, and it's a very good environment for this kind of experience because it's just quiet. When thinking ceases, I'm aware of myself as I truly am, but I'm also aware that what I ultimately am is more than myself. There's more there. There's that absolute. And that's why I don't still hold on to the word God, even if it's often very badly used, or the divine, the absolute, because it's subjective, but it's not, it's more than subjective. It's also kind of everywhere. And to me, that, and it's only experienced in that silence where the little me self kind of drops out and there's only that presence of love. And that's kind of been my ongoing experience the last 16 years.
That's a very good point, the silence. That reminds me of Ramana Maharshi. For a very long time, he actually refused to even say anything. And with a lot of students, he didn't say anything. There was something interesting that he would just gaze into somebody and they would start feeling things. Silence, that's a very, very important point, I think. Thank you for that. And so, Iti, before we close, what about any experiences of yours?
Okay, I guess I have two answers to this question, and I'll make them two very brief points. One is, and I guess this kind of connects to my previous interest in chaos magic and the left-handed path, and the experience of love and compassion and those kind of feelings are feelings that I necessarily didn't experience in a mystical way, but I've experienced them. I can experience them right now all the time, and I suppose more their will, their experiences. I want to feel, and I believe in those things because, well, it's what I want. You know, I want a world of love, and the only way to ever get a world of love is by being loving. So I be loving, you know, and I experience that a feeling of love you guys are all talking about, but it's not coming necessarily from a mystical experience. It's coming from a sense of want and a sense of creation and a sense of will. Now, in regards to the experience of this absolute, I tend not to see necessarily things like that. But, I mean, the closest thing is when I was exploring chaos magic, I kind of tried to connect to what I call, like, the primal chaos, and it was kind of like, you know, almost what you might want to say, like, what was there was before the universe existed or whatever. It's kind of this everything-nothingness. And I suppose I kind of, you guys seem to more fall on the experience of everything, and my experience is more on the experience of nothingness. And with that, I'd like to thank everyone for being on the show tonight.
Yes, thank you all very much. And we will continue this episode perhaps next week, but very soon. So thank you, Orbit, Windwalker, and Well-Named.
Good
yeah,
night.
Thank
now.
You guys.
Good afternoon.
Yeah. Oh. Good now.
Thank you all. All right, we'll talk later. Bye.